So Clint, I have a problem I need your help with.
Hey, I'm here for you. Hey, listen, you're back. I got it.
Okay. So as you are aware, this podcast has a Patreon, patreon.com/originalcastpod, where you can go and gain access to the original cast of the
Right.
movies and all kinds of other fun things. And I usually, every time I get a new patron, I thank them on the
Oh,
air. That's
that's a
the
good
idea.
idea. Good, good, good.
But this time, the patron I have to thank is you.
Oh.
And I'm just not sure how to do that organically. Is there
Oh,
like a.
well, here's what I would say,
Sure.
if I may suggest.
Sure.
Go with your gut and be as obsequious and sniveling and kowtowing as you possibly can, because I have a gigantic ego, and
Okay.
this will do nothing but feed
And it
that.
needs
So,
feeding? Okay.
yeah,
Yeah.
really. I mean, like, think worm tongue on, in The Hobbit. It's just really
Oh, okay. So really like deep kind of
sycophant kind of, yeah.
like
So,
Brad
wait a minute.
Dourif kind of like full, you know.
Yeah, another Huntington guy, by the
Right.
way.
They oh,
Okay,
they
let me
Okay, you
prepare.
gonna prepare yourself? Okay. All right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh boy.
No, you don't like it? Okay, we'll workshop it. We'll
Yeah,
workshop it.
we'll
Yeah,
work so.
we'll
Yeah.
workshop it.
Whenever my world falls apart, I never lose hope or lose heart. Whatever the form of the storm that may brew, not with you to lean on, darling's you.
Hello and welcome to the Original Cast, a podcast about original cast albums and the people who love them. I'm Patrick Flynn. My guest today is a long-standing broadcast professional, podcaster, best-selling author, comic book author, and the elder statesman of America's first family of podcasting. It's Clint McElroy, everybody.
Underline the elder. Yeah. Extremely elder. The EE.
I was going to say
Yeah.
father, but all your sons are fathers now, so
Yeah, they
that sort
are.
of
That's right.
becomes problematic in that,
But
yeah.
I am the paterfamilia.
You are,
So,
yes, exactly,
I can live with that.
right,
Yeah.
as it goes. Yes, to hang in. Yes, so it's lovely to talk to you and to
Oh,
meet you.
I'm tickled to be here.
This
When
is good.
Justin told me he was doing your podcast, I was extremely jealous, and wouldn't you know, he turned right around and recommended me you get in touch with me.
Absolutely.
So
I'm so glad he did because you're here to talk about.
my favorite cast album of all time, and that is the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
At the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, we speak so damn convincingly.
They're nervous, but they're grinning.
It is a rare turn. I was sure we had done this before. We have not. We've
Oh,
never talked
really?
about Spelling Bee, which shocks me, as a show that I very much enjoy and have seen, and many people have. I'm stunned that we hadn't covered this before. So I'm ecstatic that
Yeah,
you're
and I mean,
talked
in your
about it.
previous 750
Episodes,
episodes.
exactly right. It's just
Yeah.
never come up. Well, I mean, it's come up in conversation, but it's never
Sure.
been top of mind. So I will ask. How did the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee come into your life?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, my involvement in theater has come about in two different exposures to children's theater. That's how I kind of got dragged in. When I was a kid, did a little theater in when I lived in Daytona Beach at an actual little theater, the Daytona Beach Little Theater Group. But then we moved around a lot when I was a kid. I'd tell you the whole story, but I'm saving it for my memoir.
Sure.
When the boys were born, and Justin kind of got involved with theater, he got cast. My little Irish apple-cheeked boy got cast in South Pacific as one of the children that sang "Dites moi." So he kind of fell in love with it. So, being a parent, you then get involved with children's theater, and I just just fell in love with theater for real for the first time. And it's funny that you know, it's all because of Justin. Mm-hmm. But all three of the boys were big theater buffs. They performed in community theater. I got involved in the local community theater groups, ended up directing some stuff, performing in some stuff, and got involved with a children's theater board, the First Stage Theater Company here in our region, and just absolutely loved it. So stayed involved with it, and I was really involved with children's theater on the board of directors. I might have even been president at the time, but was always looking for a good show to do, a good children's theater show.
Mm-hmm.
So I read about this one, about a spelling bee with elementary school kids. I thought, whoa, okay, that's perfect. That's wheelhouse for us. Yeah. So started finding out a little bit about it and did it, you know, and I, you know, it's so funny because I think with cast albums, depending on where you live, I think a lot of people's first exposure to musical theater is through cast albums. Because we, you know, we don't get to New York on a regular basis or even a big city. I mean, during these years, I lived in Huntington, West Virginia, which we didn't get a lot of big shows and a lot of, you know, big tours. And so our first experience, I think for a lot of people, is like that. You get the cast album, you listen to it, and you kind of, you know, fall in love with it. So, unfortunately, my wife of 27 years, Leslie, the boy's mom, passed away in 2005. And so it was in May. And so it was a rough summer, as you might imagine. So some good friends said, listen, you need to get out of town. Let's go to New York. Let's see some shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went as a family, and we went to New York. And the first show we went and saw was 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. Two things happened. I fell in love with the show and realized that it was not a children's theater.
No, it is not a children's show. No.
I mean, it's just not.
No.
And so that was kind of my real exposure to it. The funny story is, this was our first night in New York, and we drove to New York.
Okay.
This is in like the first week of August. And we drove up on the same day that we had tickets for Spelling Bee. So it was a blazing hot time. And I mean, actually temperature wise in New York on the day we went. And so we were running late, and we got stuck in, I believe it was the Holland Tunnel. And so just barely made it to the show. We went straight there. Hadn't even checked in the hotels. Went straight to the show in what we had been wearing in, you know, our street clothes. So I had on like a big old pair of Bermuda shorts and I think like a bowling shirt. And I looked like hell. We were all sweaty and terrible. We go to the show, got there about a half an hour before it opened. And the boys, you know, I'm exhausted because I had driven all this way, and I'm sitting on a bench waiting for the doors to open. And, the guys came over and said, Dad, they're looking for people to be guest spellers in the show. And we signed you up. I said, why did you do that? He said, well, come on. It'll be fun. You know, they want to interview you. So I said, okay. So I go over and they have this big form and they fill it out and they describe you and they ask you for your interests and everything else. And then a few minutes before the doors open, they call out, and I was picked as one of the guest spellers. So it's a really interesting process. If you've never seen 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, they pick four people from the audience to actually participate in the spelling bee. And it is an excuse to pull out all these, I think, the best jokes in the show. I lay a lot of the credit for the show at the feet of Jay Reese, who played Vice Principal Douglas Panch, for coming up with a lot of those jokes. But so I ended up going on stage, and since then, this was 2005. So for 19 years, I've been telling people, yes, I have performed on a Broadway stage.
Yes, in an original cast.
Because I have.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
And it was one of the coolest experiences of my life. Because this was with the original cast. And I lasted to the very, almost the very end, to the point where they have to get rid of the last audience speller.
Right.
And so they called me up, and when you go up, they describe you and they say, Mr. McElroy. And so I walked up, and I think you've seen the pictures, and I had this gray handlebar mustache. And at one point it was, Mr. McElroy has often been mistaken for former President Theodore Roosevelt. And so one of the main spellers, one of the characters, Chip, had had missed a word, and he was gone. He was out. So I thought, wow, they're going to have to get rid of me before too much longer.
Right.
Called me up. And the instructions they give you before the show is ask for a definition of the word. Ask for the word to be used in a sentence. And they also tell you, just be yourself. We're casting you because of your personality. Don't try to get up there and be a performer and try to get laughs. And I've seen some productions where the guest spellers did try to do that, and it's terrible. It
doesn't go well.
So I got up there, and the audience is watching, and Doug Pant says, your word is catechunes. And I said, can you give me a definition? Say, catechunes is an old Norwegian sailing term. So I say, can you use it in a sentence? And he said, har, var be a catechunes. and so I had no idea.
Right.
So I said, C-A-T-E-R-J-E-U-N-E-S, catechunes. There's this long silence. And he says, that is correct. And everybody went nuts. They went nuts. The audience went nuts. I could see my children standing in their chairs in the audience. The cast was gasping. It was one of the funniest things ever. So I spelled my word right, so I turned around instead of heading back up to the bleachers. And before I could even sit down, he said, Mr. McElroy!
Right.
And I got called back up. And he said, your word is xerophthalmiology. And I said, can you give me a definition? He said, there is no known definition. I said, can you use it in a sentence? And he said, no. So everybody's on pins and needles, and I go, X-E-R-O-P-T-H, and there's still no bell. I'm going, oh, God, I'm going to do it. I, ding! Drop the etymology. So when the last guest speller is eliminated, they have this big song that is the prayer of the counselor, Mitch Mahoney, and gives you a juice box, which I still have.
Oh, hey.
Still have my juice box. And they sing this song together and escort you to your seat in the audience, doing this. And, goodbye, 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 goodbye. And it was one of the funniest things that ever happened to me. And so, and you know, when you're up there and you're sitting in as one of the guest spellers, the cast whispers instructions to you. So I had Jesse Tyler Ferguson, for crying out loud, going, okay, now I'm going to move in slow motion. And we move in slow motion. And, you know, I've got Celia Keenan Bolger going, all right, squat down. And I'm on stage and I'm dancing with these broad. It was amazing. But the great postscript was, this was our first day in New York. So everywhere we went for the rest of that week, somebody would say, I saw you in Spelling Bee. Was that fixed? Did they tell you, Catechunes? We were in Dean and DeLuca. We were in a subway station.
Oh, my gosh.
We were at FAO Schwartz. And I said, how big was the audience?
Yeah.
You know, but it was so very cool. And I've loved it ever since. I have spelled two more times and did not do nearly as well. In like a touring show, and they did a production at Marshall University where I taught theater. Mm. And I was one of the guest spellers and went out on my first word. It was humiliating.
Oh, man. Well, you know, you're not a, I mean, I'm sure there's some relief to that, though. I mean, like, oh, yeah. I'm not going to go. I get to sit down and watch the show.
But I learned I will never forget how to spell Zerothiomology again.
Sure.
I've got it right here.
You got it locked in. That's right.
The little gray cells.
There you go. Don't know where things are in my life, but I can spell that.
Oh,
word,
right? Yeah. The, yeah.
It's replaced valuable information, I'm sure.
My grandchildren's names? No, right. Sorry.
No, that's not. No, that came later. That's not, you know.
Xeropt. Yeah, that I can do.
You can do
that
it.
I can do
in your sleep, right? Wake up in the middle of the night, startled and screaming.
So, long story long.
No, that's great. I mean, it's such a, it's funny to me that as somebody who only knows you through, you know, the podcast, obviously, that your theater development came so late, not least because you are, you know, I mean, you're on the radio for years and years, which is performance of a different kind, obviously, but still performance. So that was obviously in your DNA somewhere, this sort of the urge to perform, or at least the urge to speak in front of groups of people.
Oh, I've always been a performer. Always wanted to be on a stage. Just, you know, the love of theater, especially when I saw what it could do for people, especially when I saw what it could do for children's theater, it became more than just, oh, hey, here's a chance to express myself. And this is one of those themes I think that runs through Spelling Bee, is the fact that, you know, in the years I directed shows and produced shows and, you know, Peter Pan and Bye Bye Birdie and all these other shows, to show that for so many kids, theater can be that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're not the jock. Maybe they're not a super student. Maybe, you know, they're not, you know, the most popular kid. But theater gives so many kids that chance to show what they can do. And I've seen it transform so many lives. And I think that's one of the underlying themes of Spelling Bee, is the fact that each one of these kids in this Spelling Bee have an arc. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the show, they are a different person than, you know, who they were when it started, for the most part, for the better. And that coalition, I think, was important to me too, in falling in love with the show.
I mean, it's also what's impressive to me about Spelling Bee from that standpoint is that it would be so easy to do a version of the show that made fun of these characters.
It
would make them the butt of the joke. And at no point, I mean, they have moments where they're silly or they're embarrassed or they're whatever. I mean, they're kids. It's going to happen. But it really treats all the kids with respect and gives them moments to shine, moments to grow, moments to be kids also.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's probably a good idea, actually, that occurs to me. That we let people know who may not be aware what like happens in the show, what the plot of the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee is. Do you think you could give us a breezy summary?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's the 25th and this is a spelling bee, and they never pin down where Putnam County is. There's probably Putnam County in every state in the union. As far as I can tell, there's one in West Virginia. I know there isn't one
in Delaware. I will tell you, but we only have three counties there. So,
oh, there you go. Yeah. So at the Spelling Bee, these six contestants, all of them with major quirks, are there, and they all love spelling. And each one of them has kind of a different makeup. The beauty of it is they're not making fun of these characters, like you said, but they each have very individual, I don't know, how would you, personalities.
And oh, they sure.
Have, they
They're
have a lot of
quirks. Kids. I mean, they are, yeah, they are, the actors are, they wear capes or they wear their uniforms or they have totems and they have lisps all and weird names. Like, that's certainly there, but they are not
the butt of the joke, which is such a fine line to walk. It's amazing how well they do it.
And so through the course of this spelling bee, which they state the rules very, very upfront, through the course of this, through a series of internal monologues where the kids are thinking, which are usually the setups for the songs, we get to know them and we get to find out about them and their backgrounds. And over the course of the spelling bee, there are some little intrigues. There are some moments where one speller tries to sabotage another speller, but they form this, some of them form friendships with each other and relationships, but all of these kids are kind of at one end of this, of the spectrum, not the spectrum.
Right.
But then through the course of the show, we see them and one by one, they are eliminated by missing a word. And they miss a word and they go off. And that is the end of that particular arc for them. But by the time all of these kids go off, they have undergone some kind of change. And so it comes down to two characters and they face off in at the end. And it's just so beautiful the way it's done. And that's what happens. You're watching a spelling bee and it's remarkable. But these kids are really, really smart. And it gives William Finn a chance in the songs to really do some creative wordplay, to some creative rhymes. That just you will not hear anywhere else. And because it's a comedy, he can get away with that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if there's another musical in the history of musicals where they would rhyme second with fecund and reckoned.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a cool story. And through this one conceit where they have to ask for definitions of the word and for the words to be used in a sentence, it gives Douglas Panch, the vice principal who's calling out the words, a chance to throw in some jokes. You can really see its improv roots in everything that happens. Everything from the words to the fact that they involve these guest spellers, which you don't see how that's ever going to work, but it worked, I think, 1,165 times.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And over the course of the, like I said, the kids change. They grow up and they become better while they're still kids. But it's not a kid's show. It really isn't. I took my 12-year-old granddaughter to see it expecting, oh, she's going to love this. And she just said, I think you have to have age to look back on this and accept it. And it's not a real strong family show. And I don't mean that content wise. I mean, the parents are represented are terrible.
Oh, yeah. To a parent. Yeah.
Terrible parents.
Yeah.
These kids all come from situations. Olive's mom is in India in an ashram and her dad hates it and kind of treats her bad. The one pair of parents we see, Logan's parents, are a gay couple who fight all the time and just push her. It's, you know, it's not, hey, pro family, you're going to love that. Walk out of here feeling good about your family. But you will walk out feeling good about these kids.
Well, and that's the trick of it. I mean, that's what's really clever is that the parents being, I mean, they're awful. They're cartoonishly awful. Like they're not, you never really genuinely fear for these kids' safety and or emotional well-being.
Right. No. Yeah.
Too much. But you get, like you say, you see one set of parents and they're the worst. And then that gives you them the freedom to have what is my favorite moment in the show when Logan intentionally misspells the word and like kicks herself out of this, chooses to relinquish herself from the situation.
Yeah.
And it's a really wonderfully empowering moment where this character does like takes control for a second, and you're just sort of, you get the sense when they walk off stage that like they're gonna be okay, like they're gonna figure this out, they're gonna be, you know, they're gonna make it.
The character I think that really embodies that is Leif Conybeare.
Mm-hmm.
That was, who was played by Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and his parents are hippies, and you know, all the kids have names like Leif and Marigold. And nobody in his family believes that he's going to do it.
Right.
And he goes through an arc that very clearly is delineated in the songs, because he starts off singing,
I'm not that smart. My siblings have been telling me that for years, that I'm not smart. We're schooled at home. They see who's bright. It breaks my heart. I'm not that smart. Guess what? You know what? Guess what? I have a gentle personality, which you'll all agree is anathema to my more aggressive family. Everyone keeps swatting,
dumb kid.
Everyone keeps yelling,
dumb kid.
How could a flea such as me think he'd be good at spelling? How?
And at the end, and walks off when he gets his juice box,
mm-hmm.
walks off triumphantly, and that's his art.
They say a bell can break your heart, but just not mine. Since I opine, I think I know I'm smart. Apple juice, please.
It's a great example of what they do with these characters. You just absolutely fall in love with these characters, even the ones that are on, a little on the obnoxious side. You get to see their vulnerability
mm-hmm.
and take to it.
And it does have, I mean, like we should say, there are some kids in there who you're not supposed to exactly
right.
adore.
Right.
I don't think any of them are hateful, but there are a few in there where you're just like, yeah, okay. Like, I'm kind of glad you lost. I'm glad it right. wasn't you. I'm glad you didn't make it through.
Well, Logan tries to sabotage
right.
Marfy her dad does by pouring soda on the stage so Marfy can't use his magic foot. That's
right.
his secret. He
right.
spells out the word on the stage with his foot in a great number that
mm-hmm.
could have been done, you know, back in vaudeville times called
yeah.
Magic Foot. And so yeah, there's some antagonist protagonist kind of stuff
sure.
going on in it. But, and when Barfy starts out, he's hateful.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't
oh,
have any
yeah.
friends. Doesn't want to have any friends. His
oh,
first
yeah.
words to Olive are shut up.
Right.
And then his last words to Olive are, I mean, he basically falls in love with her. It's
right.
got a little love story in there.
Right. He almost throws the whole thing because
almost.
He wants her to win her. Yeah. But then she says, no, it's fine. You go ahead and
no.
do it. And
it's
he
okay.
does. Yeah.
It's okay, Barf. Oh, oh. It's me every time.
But that's the thing of it, is that it has this real, again, like there's a version of this show that's like the Mad TV version where these kids are like just the worst and
mm-hmm.
that they become the butts of the, because we've all, I mean, this came out, if you weren't around in 2005, the spelling bee was kind of there was a spelling bee fever in the early 2000s mm-hmm. that gripped the nation. And that may sound silly because it was, but it did actually happen where, I don't know if it couldn't have been the first time that the National Spelling Bee was televised, but people really started to like, I don't know if it coincides with like video sharing online where people start sharing all these videos of people's kids spelling these words and these kids being like, it's so intense. This
on,
competition
on ESPN.
Yeah.
It was
like
on ESPN for crying out loud yeah. for years and years. It
not the Ocho
be.
Either, but like the real,
no,
the real
uh-huh.
ESPN. Right.
ESPN Uno.
Uno. Yeah. Right. The one thing in the prime time. And, but it is that, you know, so this was of a cultural zeitgeist they were kind of grabbing onto with this bit. But again, the commentary was always on the higher level or on the stand-up level was always like, these kids are weird. Isn't this weird? And this show
yeah.
is really,
yeah.
really, there's so much heart to it. And it's also funny as a show coming from somebody like Bill Finn as a composer, where it falls in his oeuvre because he's always a composer with heart. I mean, he always has a lot of characters, but he's also a very, his shows have a real like kind of cynical kick to them. Usually there's always like a little grind in it, and the characters survive despite that, you know, or they thrive despite that. And this is not that. This is like the complete, it's just like, no, it's fun. It's silly. It's light. It's romantic comedy. And there's like stuff and stakes to it, but it is generally like he's never written a score that is just more fun than this one. It's just so, like you say, it's so much fun.
And it's so funny in the presentation of it is fairly simple. It's, I tell you, you know what it reminded me of? It really kind of reminded me of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Yes, it absolutely does.
Yeah. The instrumentation, it's like a small combo playing, very piano driven. Most of the songs are very keyboard driven. And so that kind of connection, and it is kind of vignette-y. Did I just make up a word?
No, I think we got that. I think I've said that before. We'll call it a word. Vignette-y. It is kind of vignette-y. Well, hang on. Use it in a sentence.
Vignette-y. I want to travel to Europe so I can visit this city of Vignette-y.
Right. My name is Tommy Vignette-y. And
I'm Tommy Vignette-y. Tommy Vignette-y.
Right. Yeah, right. You got some snow tires? Right.
Yeah. Come on. Just look in the trunk. Look in the trunk. But I mean, it's very episodic. You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And this is too, but you have that running plot through it that You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown doesn't have of the spelling bee. And that's kind of the mechanism for it. But it is very much that kind of feel and that kind of bum, 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 bum. And the music just drives on and keeps it all moving.
It's fun. And I wonder if you're working in children's theater, you've encountered this. There seems to be more and more shows now that are doing junior versions or TYA versions, especially shows that are borderline. They just came out with a version of the Percy Jackson, the Lightning Thief musical that's TYA.
Yeah.
Because I speculated, I wonder if this is the case. They're doing their own rewrites because like, smaller or community theaters are putting these shows on and they're probably just editing it themselves, you know, to make it more kids appropriate. And I think the authors are sort of like, well, or we could make them a version where they, like we do the edits for them and then it's artistically honest and they'll buy it. You know what I mean? Instead of like mutilating something that somebody else has worked on so hard.
But I wonder, Patrick, if that's doing a disservice to the performers, to the production.
Is a junior version or that they're not letting them sort of do it themselves.
I don't know. I mean that there is a junior version. I think that there is a place for it. I'm involved with a group, Huntington Area Regional Theater, and we do plays in the summer in a theater here in Huntington. We've been doing it for years and years and years and years and years. And we use some of these junior versions usually as like a pre-show. A kid's pre-show. But I think at some point when you reach high school level.
Well, you should be doing. Yes, absolutely. You should be. Depends who your audience is, I think.
Right. Like, that's true, too.
Because here at Adventure, the audience is kids. It's an hour show. No intermission. Like that's what we do. And so that's.
MTI and some of these other groups that do this, I think it's great. And I think there is a place for it. But like, you know, I've seen I don't know if Guys and Dolls has.
That'd be hilarious. Oh, Clint, can you imagine?
well, there is a version. It's called Bugsy Malone.
So. Well, that's true. Yes, absolutely.
But nobody can ever figure out how to make the marshmallow machine guns work properly.
And or make the finale work. You can't have a giant like food fight on the stage. I mean, you could, but then everybody's going to get all messed up.
Well, then you're going to be doing the Marx Brothers. And
my name is Tallulah.
God, that song will be, now that song's going to be in my head for the rest of the night. That's it.
I apologize. I'm sorry. No, I have that way.
It is. Yeah. But that's such a fine line to walk every time you're doing, because you know when you're doing children's theater, like there's cloying, or there's too intense, and finding material that is quality that the performers are going to want to perform. I mean, down here, like I said, at Adventure is a professional theater, so we're trying to attract talent, and it's you've really gotta find the right stuff. So I'm really happy that it's like. That these shows are coming out with
two-way
junior versions, so the actors can get involved in something interesting. The kids can see something And I think there's really something great about, I imagine this, I have this in my head, this version of a kid who grew up seeing Into the Woods Jr. and never, and not knowing there's a whole second act
second
to the
act.
Story.
Yeah.
And then getting to a certain age and then watching the second act, which is obviously
yeah.
very,
they
very
died?
Different. Right. And like, just being like, oh my gosh, like it's the ultimate sequel experience, because like it's one show, but you just saw it in two entirely different sections. So that makes me really happy in my heart for like those kids who turn like 15 and they're like, I'm sorry, there's a what? There's a second what?
What? Who messed around with the prince?
And then got stepped on? How does
what?
The nice lady?
She was my favorite.
She just got a baby. You told me she won a Tony. She did win a Tony. That's,
yeah.
You win a Tony for getting stepped on, though. That's the, or for Dancing with a Magic Foot, like Dan Fogler in this production. How is that, by the way? Because I've seen that performance on video, but it seems to me like, I think he did it at the Tonys that year, even possibly.
Oh, yeah.
And
they did kind of almost a medley.
Mm-hmm.
Because they even brought out a guest speller, and it was the Reverend Al Sharpton, who was running for president at the time. And they played it for real. I mean, they could tell he didn't know the word, but they spelled some words. Everybody got a little clip of the song. And it's so funny. And this is kind of my cool perspective of sitting in those bleachers for a good first act and
sure.
beyond, in the fact that I saw these numbers from behind. I saw Dan Fogler. I didn't get to see Dan Fogler's face while he did the number. It was really great. Here's the thing. Dan Fogler was singing in character voice. Magic Foot, because Barfay,
right.
There's an accent, ague.
Right.
Is very adenoidal and, and talks with and has this great character voice. And he maintains it all through the song and he's, Dan Vogler's a good singer, damn good singer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to maintain a character voice, not just acting, but also to carry that over. You don't want to do a Jim Nabors. Am I talking like Homer Pyle like that? And then seeing the impossible dream.
Right.
Fogler is consistent all through. And so, and to win a Tony for that is remarkable.
Oh, yeah.
Because Magic Foot is a great number. And when I first saw this show, that was my favorite number in this show. Eventually, it got deposed by another song.
So, oh, okay.
We'll subsequent listeners.
We will come. Yeah, I was gonna say we'll come to that a little bit later. This was a pretty stacked. So, I mean, I imagine when you went up to New York in summer 2005, you had kind of a lot of choices. You were sort of spoiled for choice of what to see.
We went to a lot of shows. We went and saw Dirty Rotten Scoundrels,
sure,
with John Lithgow and Norbert Leo Butts
and Sherry Renee Scott. Yeah,
and that was awesome. We saw Spamalot after, this was right after Eric Idle had left Spamalot and had been replaced by Alan Tudyk, who the boys and I loved from Serenity, from Firefly.
Right, for Firefly at that point. Yeah, that's what he was.
And so one of the funniest things I've ever seen in a theater, and we were the cause of it. At curtain call, Alan Tudyk came out to take his bow, and we were about 15 rows back. And as one, all four of us, me, Justin Griffin, and Travis, all yelled, "Tude!" And it broke him. He looked. he looked out into the audience and started laughing. And afterwards, we went up and introduced ourselves to him, got him to sign all that kinds of stuff. And he said, "Are you guys crazy?" And so we saw that. The boys went and saw Stones in My Pocket, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I went and saw, I do not remember, there was one other show that we went to go see. But yeah, it was a plethora of riches. We saw so many great shows
Well, I'm noticing from the Tony list here that I have open, the for any Mabim Bam fans who are joining us for the first time, this was also when you guys went to see Glengarry Glen Ross, I'm assuming.
Yes, that was it. Glengarry Glen Ross.
Right. A story that has been recounted several times on My Brother, My Brother.
Yeah. Okay. Liv Schreiber.
Right.
Alan Alda. It was.
That's quite a cast.
It was
yeah.
an all-star cast. And, yeah. And we were like two rows back. It was. Mm. It was great. He kept doing this thing. Liv Schreiber was doing this little thing that I, you know, you always want to steal from the best,
mm-hmm.
where he had his middle finger on his thumb,
mm-hmm.
and he would pop it. You know, like some people would, you know, twiddle their fingers mm-hmm. or twiddle their thumbs. It was just like this nervous habit that he did. But I always remembered that, watching that, going, that is a very cool affectation. And it was summed up how he was, you know, always on the edge, and he was, you know, full mm-hmm. of energy. And you know, I think I learned a lot from acting from just watching that production.
I think you can, I mean, that is, you know, this is a musicals podcast, but I would recommend anybody who seriously wants to do acting to go see a Broadway play from close up.
Oh,
you
yeah.
can really, the very first Broadway show my wife and I ever, the very first Broadway show she ever saw, we went to see Private Lives with Alan Rickman
in 2003. Gee.
Which was at the Richard Rodgers at the time, and it was her first Broadway show. And even though I didn't have any money, I bought her third row center seats. As she likes to tell the story, in the house that night behind us was Robert Sean Leonard. We had better seats than Robert Sean Leonard. That's what she likes to, that's how she likes to tell that story.
That'll teach you.
But watching him and that cast, which was phenomenal, work at that close range was really, really interesting. Like you say, you notice a lot, like, because he's acting for the whole theater, obviously, like everybody has to be able to see him and hear him, but he's also got to keep it real. And it's such a gosh, that's such a fine line to walk in a play. In a musical, I feel like you have a slightly easier time because things are so heightened anyway that you can kind of open it up a little bit. And there are some actors like Michael Cerveris who and Judy Kuhn, the Queen, Long May She Reign, who are really good at kind of finding the balance between those two states and walking lines of intensity and also. Mm-hmm. bombast but in a I mean, plays are hard to perform at a Broadway house. Broadway houses are caverns, and those, like, that's not what we look for in our talkie drama anymore since TV really took off, you know.
It's really funny because my I remarried in 2009 and Carol, who I married, mm-hmm. Was not a big theater person, not mm-hmm. interested in it, you know. Love that I loved it, and you know, and really preferred straight dramas
mm-hmm.
to musicals. Not a big fan of musicals. She'd say, "Oh, that's singing and dancing."
Mm-hmm.
But the first musical I ever took her to see was the touring company of 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee,
mm-hmm.
and she loved every minute of it. Now. We were also in row three,
mm-hmm.
and that I learned makes a difference
mm-hmm.
For her. Mm-hmm. You know, they say there's no bad seats in the house, but for her to make that connection, that live connection,
mm-hmm.
You know, you needed to be close. So ever since then, I have, you know, I'm very careful about the shows I take her to see.
Sure.
But like we get close and. You know, you and I talked briefly about Come From Away.
Mm-hmm. About a week ago. Yeah.
That.
Oh, yeah.
That connected. And Julia, that connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I taught at Marshall, I taught theater classes at Marshall and directed at Marshall University in Huntington. And one of the things that I try to get across to the students, especially in theater appreciation class, almost everybody who came to my theater appreciation class had no theater experience, had never mm-hmm. seen theater, had not seen a play, had not, you know. And I explained to them that I think it's like sporting events. Mm-hmm. Until you have that first person experience of being a part of that energy, of going to a good play with good actors and making that connection. If the actor's good, if the performance is good, you feel like they're talking to you. you don't necessarily get that in TV, movies, that kind of stuff. But it's like, I would tell them, it's like going to a concert. Tell me your favorite concert. They tell me your favorite concert. And their memory of that is that person was singing that song right to them or playing that guitar solo just for them. And that, I think that to really appreciate, you know, theater, whether it's musical, straight theater, whatever kind of performance venue, you have to have at least one experience so that you can tap into what that feels like. That one-on-one energy, they're talking just to me. I understand that. They don't even necessarily have to identify with the character. Mm-hmm. But if they make that energy connection with them, it really gives you then a foundation for appreciating theater. I think it gives you an appreciation for TV, movies, everything else. Mm-hmm. But once you've had that experience, once you've tasted that and you say, okay, now I get it, that develops and that continues. And I will never stop crediting Spelling Bee with being the first time I took her to see something that she just really connected with.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think it does have a broad appeal. It's so funny and it's so heartwarming, and it has heartwarming. I said heartwarming, like they are beagles. Right. Sorry. It touches you, and it, you know, this is, I'm really throwing out the homilies, but it says something. It does something for you.
Yeah.
You don't just laugh for 2.5 hours. You experience it, and you are changed as well by the end of it in some little increment, hopefully.
But that, I mean, and that's the thing that live performance can do that non-live performance can't. I mean, you can have very intense experiences listening to a recording or watching a movie or watching, you know, a TV show, any of those things.
Right.
But there is something about being in the room, not just with the performer, but with the audience, and you all go through this experience together. I mean, for me, like you mentioned, Come From Away was one of those shows where I saw it when it was here in DC at Ford's Theater. And before it went to Broadway, and I didn't know anything about it. I just had somebody come up to me and say, you have to go see this show. And I'm not going to tell you. Yeah. And they were just like, you're going to love it. And they gave me a little synopsis about it, so I wouldn't be totally, you know, like surprised when, you know, so surprised it's 9/11. But they're like, but I'm not going to tell you anything else because it wouldn't, doesn't matter. Just get a ticket and go see it. So my wife and I went to see it, and she was, I don't know how many months pregnant with our twins when we went. We're at Ford's, which I don't know if you've ever been to Ford's Theater, but it's like, you know, it's theater from the 19th century. It is not the most comfortable or the most like gracious modern conveniences, you know. And we're kind of half behind a pole, you know, like we're not fully obstructed, but there's a pole in the vicinity. And it just was transportive. It was absolutely swept me up and took me to another place. And, you know, it does. It's great to do that, even when you see as much theater as I do, to be like, oh, this can still happen. I can still have these feelings. Right. I can still do that. And I think it's really true that there is a show for everybody. You know, like,
oh,
you say,
absolutely.
Yeah. That, yeah. Like your wife found Spelling Bee was a show for her. It's that, like, there's a musical out there for you. It exists. Trust me. And it might be Hamilton. It might not be. That was a lot. It's become a lot of people's shows. But, like,
right.
There's a show. Like, you don't like singing. Now, you don't like dancing. You know.
What show did you
say? Oh, some guy. And,
I'm not.
It's William Henry Harrison. His name is.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah.
His name is William Henry Harrison.
Yeah.
And there's a million things he hasn't. Right, because he died.
Right. Yeah.
It's that thing of like, you don't like singing, you don't like dancing, you don't like On the Town, like whatever, fine. But like, there's a show out there for you that you can that you can find. And
by the way, I better throw in, I do know Hamilton, and if I want to stay in my kids' good grades,
I was going to say, if you're going to stay on the text chain,
I have to. Say nice things about Mr. Miranda.
Right. Well, that's true. Actually, when Justin was on, I didn't ask him about Hamilton at all. So I'm sure I'm going to get emails about that later. It seems to me that you spent like a good portion of your theater appreciation career trying to spread the love as far as you possibly can.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I used a lot of video, but I also incorporated, they had to go see Each semester, there were always two performances that Marshall University Theater Department did. My friend Jack Cirillo directed quite a few of them, and I would require them to go and write a paper about it. Mm-hmm. They had to write a paper, a review using what they had learned in theater appreciation.
Sure.
So it had to be things like that. It had to mention, had to touch on technical aspects, lighting, blocking, everything else, but also the story and the presentation of it. And I did that because they had to have that experience. They had to have that connection, had to feel that. And fortunately for me, Marshall has an amazing theater department. Mm. And the only time it got weird was when I would be in one of those shows and they had to write their critique.
Right.
The guy playing the drummer in the Salvation Army band and Guys and Dolls looked a little old for the part.
Right, sure.
But yeah, that was kind of the thing. Mm-hmm. It kind of forced the issue, but it was really cool. I've stayed in touch with a lot of the students that I taught, and it was so fun to see kids go from the theater appreciation class, and then I would have them in introduction to acting in the next semester. And then I would, maybe a year later, I would be performing in a Marshall production and they're one of the leads.
Mm.
It's kind of nice because it's kind of come full circle. This summer, Justin, his wife, Sydney, and I are going to be co-directing Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and the actor playing Willy Wonka was one of my students that first came up there. So I'm looking forward to working with her and seeing how she has come along, how she's progressed. It's very gratifying to see, but again, you've got to plant that seed. I think they have to have that experience. And you know what? They may go and feel that connection and not even like
right
the production.
Right.
That's it's not required that they like it.
No.
It's just required that they see, oh, okay, I get that. I sense that. I maybe I'll see something else.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the secret motives of adjunct professor Clint Paffo.
Well, you got to keep yourself entertained too. I think that's a good, yeah.
Right. That's true.
And you got to get butts in the seats for the theater shows. So it's good they have to go see them. Right. Built in audience there. but I think people really do respond to that. Like you said, and I think one of the things probably your students respond to when you and take your class again is that there's a genuine joy when you talk about this stuff. There's a genuine love for it. And that's what I also get, I think, is what a lot of people respond to in Spelling Bee, is that at no point do I feel like the authors are superior to this material or are looking, winking at me. It is all just like the same care and love and comfort and character crafting that like Bill Finn and James Lapine put into Falsetto Land, which is a show about a man's sexual awakening in the AIDS epidemic. Like they put into this show about, a bunch of 12 to 14 year olds doing spelling in a county that might be in New York, Georgia, Florida, West Virginia. We don't know. And it shows. It really, really translates. The love underneath in the characters and the performers, and it just really, really reads. It reads on the album too. Like the album is really, really well done in that way. It really makes me feel good.
And let me say this. In my opinion, I have seen productions of this show. It's not bulletproof. The material is all good.
Right.
But you've got to be a performer with something special to be able to be an adult and pull off playing a kid without it being a parody without it being a stereotype. They really get into the way a kid thinks. I'm in Olive's song, my friend, the dictionary, she has this great line that sounds like a very smart person, but also sounds like a kid.
I love my dictionary, and I love the indented border. Every word's in alphabetical order, ergo lost things always can be found. And I wrap my head around the fact that in one book is the entire language of our species, which is a favorite term of Nietzsche's, who's the great-grandfather of Christina Ricci's.
It's such a kid moment. And all of these characters have these kid moments. Really smart kids, smart kids with a great vocabulary, but at the same time, it feels like a kid. And I have seen some productions where people are playing it as parody, saying the exact same words, singing the exact same songs, but you know, it's not an easy gig.
Yeah,
to pull off, and I think the direction is extremely important for the show.
Well, and also the comedic sense. I mean, the comedic timing, the comedic, the sense of the improv roots of it, where it's got to feel very spontaneous and alive, and also is fully scripted. Like, that's a tough skate. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that everybody's going to be able to do.
Right. And it's not fully scripted because you've got this element of these guest spellers that pop up.
Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of key. You got to be flexible. You got to be ready to, you know, roll with the punches, man.
Well, not everybody's okay with the fourth wall coming crumbling down on them. Least of all, I will say, nobody hates the fourth wall coming down on a show more than people who are in theater. Like, I think that's the number one least fan of that, sitting in a house being like, oh God, are they going to come out here? Is if you're in theater. And so I can imagine there's probably been a number of people who've done Putnam Kenham Spelebee who would be like, on balance, I would rather they didn't come up on the stage, but it is but it's integral to the show. It has to be there. It's so important to the tone and it removes that little level of reality that we need removed so that we can feel safe in the fact that nothing genuinely awful is going to happen to these kids, which is always, when I see something with kids, my number one fear that if any point something genuinely awful happens to these kids, I might have to leave. Like, I just can't do that.
Kids are dogs.
Yeah.
We're dogs. My wife will walk out.
Yeah. And I'm with her.
I got to tell you a story that illustrates what you're talking about, the fourth wall coming down.
Sure.
I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it wasn't too long ago, but it was the last Broadway production of Hair.
Oh, okay.
And they performed at the Tonys.
Uh-huh.
And they went out into the audience and they climbed all over people and they were making people dance and they were, literally standing over people, waving their business and people. And you could tell some of the people really got into it.
Yeah.
Some of the people did not really get into it.
So, no.
You know, but it adds to me that element of this. I'm a big fan of anarchy, especially in comedy. I mean, my patron saints are Groucho, Chico, Harpo, the Marx Brothers, and that air of anarchy that you know, we try to do in the Adventure Zone and all that stuff. It just adds that energy, and because even though it's a scripted show, mostly scripted, you're not sure what's going to come next.
Right.
You know what's going to happen. Nobody expects Jesus to show up.
Sure.
And he does.
Yes. And there he is. And gives her the permission to, just cut it loose. Which is great. It's what you need. It's such a wildly bizarre, fun, excellent show. I'm really glad you brought it to the podcast today. And I have to ask, because you teased it earlier, Clint, what is your favorite song in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee?
I have listened to this cast album hundreds of times.
Sure.
That's no exaggeration. And the song that stops me dead in my tracks is the I Love You song.
Mm.
Olive sings. She's in the middle of spelling chimerical.
Mm-hmm.
And we've kind of given a little bit of the backstory, but her mom is an absent mom. Her dad is always working late. She saved a seat for her dad. This was set up brilliantly in the, you know, early on in the show.
Right.
But that seat is still empty.
Mm-hmm.
And her dad doesn't show up, hasn't shown up. And so in her mind, she has another one of those internal monologues that a lot of the songs are. And she fantasizes about her parents telling her how much they love her, how proud they are of her. And all she wants is for somebody to be, you know, she's wondering, if I win this spelling bee, I go to Washington, D.C., plasma TV, big fancy hotel. And all she wants to know is who's going to be my chaperone.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom's not there. Her dad is, you know, persona non grata. He's not showing up. And all this little girl wants is some kind of connection with her parents. And it is a beautiful song. It's still got a lot of comedy in it. And and her mom and dad show up in fantasy form, played by Lisa Howard and Derek Baskin. And it will absolutely break your heart. But by the end of it, it's like so many things in this show. You feel she's a little bit stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And she spells chimerical correctly. And it's absolutely beautiful. There's a three-part harmony right at the end with no music behind it, with the three of them just kind of riff. And you know, it will absolutely rip your heart out and stomp on it. But it makes you love this girl. It makes you love Olive so much. And Celia Keenan-Bolger just kills in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, that's,
that sounds like a favorite song. I was going to say,
because it also sums up why I love the show. It's so fun. The song is funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she talks about her mom bathing in the Ganges and then she's singing about being in an ashram. But at the same time, she tells her dad, you know, she tells her mom in this fantasy, you know, I think dad takes out on me what he can't take out on you. And that just, yeah. it hits you hard. So,
yeah.
That is my favorite song in the production.
That's a good one. And that's a great reason for it. I absolutely love that.
That's a good philosophy. Yeah,
it is. Oh, there you go. Oh, very nice.
Another Charlie Brown callback.
We'll bring it on in. Yeah. Well, new Charlie Brown. We got from Andrew Lippa in that little section there. Clint, this has been wonderful to talk to you. Oh. You have things to promote. You have told me. What can you tell us about where are the McElroys going? Where is the Adventure Zone going?
I tell you the best thing to do is go to McElroy.family.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see all that. We're getting back on the road. We're going to be in Chicago in April, and we're going to be doing some stuff at C2E2. We've got our sixth graphic novel coming out from First Second for the Adventure Zone. That'll be coming out in July. And then we're getting back on the road, getting back and doing shows. And of course, we're currently in an arc that I think people are going to love, Taz versus Dracula.
Yes.
The Adventure Zone versus Dracula.
It's a lot of fun.
And we just have a blast. Patrick, I'm the luckiest SOB on the planet. I get to act the fool, and, you know, I get paid money to hang out with my kids, and, you know, I'm so proud of them. And I really am very, very fortunate. And I get to meet cool people like you.
Oh, well, thank you, Clint.
Thanks. That was really, a little nice. Kiss.
That was nice. I like it. Yeah, well, I mean, you know. It's kind of you. I have no power in the world, but I'll take it. No, that's
let me shine
that on up. There you go. Exactly right. Oh God, Clint, thank you so much.
Oh, have me back. I'll come up with some more fake stories. No, they're all true. They're all true. What am I saying?
If I go to Washington, will I be on my own? Because if I go it when you smiled. Start from the beginning, when you were a beginner. You were the perfect child. We always knew you were a champion. Your sadness filled my room. Dear, if you should feel my gloom, blame it on me. Blame it on your daddily and mammily, 'cause depression runs in our family.
Ah. The original cast is produced and edited by me, Patrick Flynn. Please rate and review the original cast on your podcatcher of choice. It's the easiest way to help other listeners find the show. Go to bit.ly/originalcaststore for original cast merchandise like t-shirts, tote bags, and more. Become a patron of the original cast at patreon.com/originalcastpod so you can listen to our bonus podcast, The Original Cast at the Movies. On the socials, we're at originalcastpod. Special thanks to our social media manager, Bethany Zalecki.
Yo, Bethany. Sup?
My thanks to Clint McElroy for coming and talking to me. I'm Patrick Flynn, and I can't. I have rehearsal.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love everything about you, dear.
Chimerical. Highly unrealistic, wildly fanciful.
That is correct.
Oh.